This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Violent and deadly weather. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Kashenka. It's Tuesday, January 3rd. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
An intense storm ripped through parts of the southeast yesterday, killing at least five people. Four of those killed were in a mobile home in southeast Alabama.
House Republicans say an independent ethics board is too aggressive and now want control of it. Part of the proposal involves not investigating anonymous claims.
Massive overcrowding and impatient travelers at airports last evening as a computer glitch caused processing delays for those returning from overseas.
And the reason we're becoming immune to all the information thrown at us on a daily basis.
This surprised me. This is some data out from Pew Research Center, and it shows that Americans are less likely than 10 years ago to feel overloaded by information. So only 20% of Americans said they felt, you know, regular information overload. That was compared to 27% who said that about a decade ago.
Market Watch reporter Katie Hill and how we're dealing these days with information overload. She's here in about 20 minutes. Violent storms pounding the South have caused at least five deaths, along with power outages, flooding, and downed power lines. Four people were killed last evening when a tree fell on their mobile home in Rehoboth, Alabama. That's in the southeast part of the state by the Florida Panhandle. Chris Ware is the public information officer for the larger Houston County Emergency Management Agency.
We don't know exactly how many homes were damaged at this time and probably won't know until tomorrow during daylight when we have time to get out and ride.
Not far from there, across the border in Walton County, Florida, a man drowned near his submerged car in the town of Mossy Head. Officials believe he was trying to evacuate. The National Weather Service says parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and southern Alabama were cause for the most concern among weather experts. Two tornadoes were also confirmed, one near Mendenhall, Mississippi, southeast of Jackson. Another, according to the Weather Channel, touched down near Mount Olive, Mississippi. Wind damage also reported in parts of Texas. What a way to return from vacation, right? You're hoping for time to decompress before heading back to work today, but the computer system used by U.S. Customs and Border Protection was not cooperating. There was a computer shutdown last night, causing massive delays for passengers around the country returning from their Christmas week and New Year's getaways. People were being processed at international terminals by hand at some airports, resulting in long lines and, of course, short tempers. Travelers reported issues in places like Atlanta, Baltimore, Boston, Chicago, Miami, New York City. Eric Singer and his family were returning from Portugal, passing through Boston's Logan.
When anybody asked whoever was there for any kind of information, they told us to just be patient and get back in line.
That's comforting. The customs agency said the outage lasted 4 hours. Travelers, of course, took to social media to vent and beg for help and, of course, share photos of those massive lines with wall-to-wall weary passengers. It was hot, it was cramped in some places, and much of the complaining was that people were just not aware of what was going on. From Washington, some House Republicans are trying to get rid of the independence of the Office of Congressional Ethics and instead put the group under the thumb of lawmakers they're supposed to be watching. So House Republicans last night approved an amendment that would do this. The Office of Congressional Ethics is governed by an 8-person board of private citizens who do not work for the government. Tom Fitton doesn't like it. He's president of Judicial Watch.
The Congressional Black Caucus hated the Office of Congressional Ethics, and they wanted to kill it or restrain it. Many Republicans never liked it from the beginning.
Lawmakers just say it's too aggressive, and those who've been cleared say reputations could be tarnished, even when suspicions were unfounded. Under the proposal from Virginia Congressman Bob Goodlatte, the House Ethics Committee would be able to nix any of its investigations, and no anonymous allegations could be considered. It also would be renamed the Office of Congressional Complaint Review. It's 11 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.
Thanks for spending time with us. As the Justice Department cracks down on domestic sympathizers of Islamic State, there's a defense lawyer in Chicago whose clients increasingly include young American Muslim men facing federal terrorism charges. With at least five domestic terrorism suspects as clients, attorney Thomas Durkin is one of the busiest national security lawyers in the U.S. His profile from Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Hong. Nicole, who is he?
So he has a very interesting clientele list. He obviously represents a lot of people accused of supporting ISIS, but also he's represented a white supremacist leader. He's represented people accused of trying to solicit the murder of judges. He's represented, Guantanamo Bay detainees. He has child pornography cases. And, you know, he admits that a lot of his clients are very unpopular, but he has no, like, guilt or shame about it. He just sees himself as a criminal defense lawyer and that his role in the system is to defend people who need defending.
Mm. So why does he tend toward these cases?
So I think a lot of big law firms, especially, and other types of defense lawyers just either can't or are unwilling to take on these kinds of cases. Obviously, there's, like, a reputational issue that comes with representing terrorists.
Yeah.
But also, these cases are not lucrative at all. Like, if you're at a big white-collar law firm, you're going to represent big banks, hedge funds, people who have very deep pockets to pay legal bills. Like, it's not really worth your time or money to help an individual defendant in a terrorism case, especially because those cases often take years, and they're really complicated. They involve national security. But when I talked to him about it, he was sort of like, I find these cases to be much more intellectually challenging than your typical corporate investigation. So I think that may be one reason why he does it.
Wow. He probably gets death threats, no?
I asked him about that, and he said not as much as you would think.
Oh. Okay. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Hong. Her piece is called A Terrorist Suspect's Best Hope in Court, and she's got a profile of Chicago attorney Tom Durkin. So this sentence he got for this terror suspect of 40 months versus, say, 15 years that some get. How did that happen? What did he do? What's his specialty say?
So I think a lot of the facts in the case were in his favor. The defendant, his name was Mohammed Hamza Khan. When he was arrested, he was a recent high school grad, and I think the government, it became clear from the start that he wasn't some sophisticated ISIS operative and that he may not have fully been, like, aware of what he was doing or what he was getting himself into. He also, unlike a lot of the other cases, is not linked to any sort of domestic violent plot. A lot of these suspects who are caught, you know, they have, you know, social media postings or conversations with informants where they talk about wanting to bomb an actual location in the U.S., and he didn't have any of that. And then I also just think it was clever lawyering. Tom came out very quickly after the charges were brought, saying that this was a political prosecution, and he was saying, why wasn't he given an opportunity before his arrest to talk to the FBI? You know, why didn't the FBI approach his parents before the arrest like they have in other cases? So I think a lot of these facts just came together in his favor, and ultimately, when he pleaded guilty, the government said the maximum sentence that they would seek is 5 years. So it started from that as the max.
Wow. Thanks, Nicole. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Hong. It's 20 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, parts of the South are bracing for more rain today, a day after severe storms killed four people in Alabama. The line of storms spawned several possible tornadoes, and the threat continued into early today for southern Alabama, southwest Georgia, and the Florida Panhandle. Chris Ware of the Dothan Houston County Emergency Management Agency says the four were killed yesterday evening when a tree fell on their mobile home in Rehoboth, Alabama.
Roads are flooded,
and we have some minor structural damages as far as storage buildings, carports that were torn from homes.
One man was killed in Florida when his car became submerged in Mossy Head. House Republicans are moving to eliminate the independence of the Office of Congressional Ethics, the chamber's nonpartisan ethics board, in a move that has triggered swift pushback from Democrats and government watchdog groups. House Republicans last night approved an amendment that would place the office under the oversight of the lawmaker-run House Ethics Committee. Tom Fitton is president of Judicial Watch.
Donald Trump talks about draining the swamp, and much of the swamp we're talking about is in the House of Representatives, and when you have corrupt politicians in the House able to get away with things because the House ethics process has been undermined, you know, that means the swamp wins.
The Office of Congressional Ethics is an independent entity that serves as the chamber's independent ethics watchdog by reviewing allegations against House members and staff. Turkish authorities say the man who killed 39 people in a New Year's nightclub attack in Istanbul before fleeing the scene is a highly professional assassin. The suspect, armed with a long-barreled weapon, killed a policeman and a civilian early Sunday outside the club before entering and firing at some of the estimated 600 people inside. And here's one of those unbelievable tales. A Vietnamese man has had scissors removed from his abdomen that were left behind during surgery 18 years ago. The 54-year-old underwent surgery in 1998 after a car accident and only recently discovered that doctors had left an unwelcome gift behind. Doctors discovered the 6-inch scissors after a recent ultrasound. He had a 3-hour operation over the weekend to remove the scissors and is said to be recovering well.
He's due back in the office today for more x-rays just to make sure they didn't leave any stuff behind this time.
Could you imagine? He had a stomach ache for 2 decades.
Yeah.
Didn't know why.
Yeah. Well, I got this sharp pain in my... suck it up.
That would be really sharp.
Holy cow. And 6-inch scissors.
Yeah.
Right? Not like some
little
toy thing.
Like
in a dollhouse or something. Wow. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. How are we managing the massive amount of information that we process every day? MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill says though we get more info thrown at us than ever before, we're less overwhelmed by it than we used to be. And the reason for this may be surprising, she says. Katie, what are we learning?
This surprised me. This is some data out from Pew Research Center, and it shows that Americans are less likely than 10 years ago to feel overloaded by information. So only 20% of Americans said they felt, you know, regular information overload. That was compared to 27% who said that about a decade ago, which shocked me because if you look at any other data out there, we're consuming a ton more information. I mean, we're now, I think our media consumption now, yes, 10 hours and 39 minutes. We spend consuming media a day on average now, according to Nielsen. I mean, that's everything, your smartphone, your internet, your TV, you know, radio, all of it. But it's 10 hours and 39 minutes that we're somehow constantly all media. I mean, I guess we all work online. We're all doing, you know, playing on a computer that time. But that's a lot.
That shouldn't count if you're at work.
It does, but yes, it shouldn't count.
That is
all. Yeah, that's our job. I mean, for us, it's really, it probably more. So it's literally our job all the time. But
so what's
but
the...
yeah, you know, so... Oh, go ahead.
What's the reason then if we don't feel information overloaded? We just better at managing it than we were?
It seems a little bit like that. So what Pew thinks is that a lot of these gadgets that give us the information, tablets, smartphones, also really help us organize it, right? Like you can go on your smartphone and it's not like all the information just starts pouring out at you. I mean, sometimes, but you have it organized in apps, you know, so you know, oh, I need to do my budget now. I'm going to go on Mint. Oh, I want to look at the news. I'm going to go on, you know, MarketWatch. You do little things like that. So your phone really helps you organize this so you feel less overloaded. And honestly, part of it, I think we're just more used to it, right? In 2006, that was 10 years ago. We weren't quite as acclimated to this as we were. I think we're pretty used to the fact that information is just streaming at our faces all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just become that too. So I think it's a little bit of both.
We're speaking with MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill. Her piece is called The Surprising Reason You're Nearly Immune to Information Overload. Sometimes I think I'm immune, and then I'll have a conversation with my son, who seems to get a lot of his information from Instagram. And specifically, specifically like ESPN. So he'll say, oh, did you hear about the Jets? And I'm thinking, no, I haven't picked up my phone in 6 minutes. What happened with the Jets? You know, and I just feel like put your phone down or walk away from your tablet for a minute and you're behind.
I mean, I think that's exactly right. And you probably have your phone with you almost nearly every second of the day. And then you put it next to your bedside table when you go to bed. I mean, that's our reality now. You know, what was really also super interesting to me about this is that The study showed that Americans with the most digital assets, so for the person who had a smartphone, a tablet, home internet, they're actually the least likely to feel information overload. Not really clear on why, but to me that was pretty fascinating. It might be that they feel very savvy about using this, and that's what's going on. But yeah, the more stuff you have that gives you information in your house, the less likely you feel information overload, which is pretty surprising.
Yeah. Now, did they specify what kind of information?
It literally looks like pretty much anything. So it could be, you know, news information, media consumption. It just, they were really asking about this concept of information overload. Do you feel it? Because, you know, I guess you could begin getting, you know, information from your friends, but you know, when you're talking to your friends, you're usually getting one thing, you know, a little slower. Whereas when you're looking at the internet, things are just zinging at your face all the time. But yeah, I mean, we're on the internet more, so one would assume that a lot of that information is coming from, you know, online and the TV, and that's where there just seems to be a lot more coming at you at once.
Market Watch reporter Katie Hill, 30 minutes now, after the hour.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email. This morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, January 3. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. 5 dead from violent weather in the south. ISIS claims responsibility for the Turkish nightclub massacre. Chaos and long lines at airports thanks to a computer outage for Customs and Border Patrol last night. House Republicans want control of an independent ethics board. Louisville women's basketball tricked Duke into defending the wrong basket, got an easy layup out of it. Sad news, by the way, no football on TV tonight. And the 3 sets of twins born in different years over the weekend. That story in about 20 minutes. As Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson awaits potential approval from the Senate on his nomination to be the next Secretary of State, observers are watching the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. With Republicans holding a one-seat advantage, Florida GOP Senator Marco Rubio could single-handedly sink Mr. Tillerson's nomination. An explanation of what's happening politically from USA Today correspondent Ledge King. Ledge, what do we have?
Rubio is on the Foreign Relations Committee, which has to consider the Secretary of State nominee from Donald Trump. And sometime Tillerson will come before the committee and have a question and answer session, be grilled a bit, and then the committee decides whether they're going to endorse his nomination and send it on to the full Senate with an endorsement. So Rubio's on that committee, and he is one of 19, but more importantly, Republicans only hold a one-seat advantage on the committee, 10-9. So one Republican who decides not to support Tillerson, such as Rubio, could join the other 9 Democrats in deciding that he should not get the committee's blessing, and that would be problematic.
Wow. All right, so has Rubio indicated that he's not on board with Tillerson?
He's raised some questions. He tweeted out about a week and a half ago his concern about Tillerson's closeness to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Specifically, Tillerson, in his role as CEO of ExxonMobil, has had a number of dealings with Russia on oil, and over time, Tillerson and Putin have become what most describe as having a close relationship, a friendly relationship. In fact, in 2013, Putin awarded Tillerson with Russia's Order of Friendship, which is a special honor bestowed upon foreign citizens who are seen as contributing to Russia's culture, economy, or international relations. And after that, after Tillerson was nominated by Trump, Rubio tweeted that being, quote-unquote, a friend of Vladimir is not an attribute I'm hoping for from Secretary of State. He followed it up a couple of days later with a statement that said he had serious concerns about Tillerson's nomination, but wanted to give it a full and fair hearing, which he'll get sometime probably January, February, okay, in that time frame.
But Rubio hasn't said he's a no on Tillerson's vote, right?
That's correct, yeah. He's not an automatic no, but he certainly raised more doubts about Tillerson than any other Republican member. The other wild card on that committee is Rand Paul, who has also said he's willing to listen and give a thorough debate on the issue. He's not been as opposed to Tillerson and has not raised any issues of note. But Paul has always sort of been his own, walked to his own tune, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's unclear whether he would go along with Tillerson as well. But it only takes one to switch, and Rubio is seen as the likeliest Republican to do so. That doesn't mean he will.
Hmm. We're speaking with Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. His piece is called Marco Rubio Could Decide Fate of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. All right, so what kind of lobbying is underway, I guess, to convince Senators Rubio and Paul that Tillerson's the right guy?
Well, I don't know much about whether Paul's being lobbied, but I can tell you that, and this is a story that the Washington Post broke, that Dick Cheney, former vice president, has called Rubio on behalf of Tillerson and Trump, I suppose, to push for Tillerson's nomination. Cheney has called Tillerson, quote-unquote, an inspired choice. So, obviously, Cheney likes the pick and doesn't want Rubio or anyone else to sort of gum up the works when it comes to this. So, Cheney has called Rubio already, according to the Post. Another person who is going to, if he hasn't already reached out, is Houston Texans football team owner Bob McNair, who gave $500,000 last year to a super PAC supporting Rubio's then-presidential campaign. He's a big fan of Tillerson as well, and there may be others calling and lobbying on his behalf, but there's obviously concern among Trump's allies that Rubio is potentially going to torpedo Tillerson's pick.
Thanks, Ledge. USA Today correspondent Ledge King. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. And if you like a little cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter with the username at Gordon Deal. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's a new year, and with that, there are a handful of words and phrases that were big or bigly in 2016 that some feel should go away in 2017. That's according to the folks at Lake Superior State University, who for the 42nd year have generated their list of words, quote, banished from the Queen's English for misuse, overuse, and general uselessness. Headlining the list this year is bigly, made famous by Donald Trump, who during a debate either said bigly or bigly, a 19th century word that means in a swelling, blustering manner. In any case, the university feels that it should be kicked to the curb. Another election-related phrase on the list, town hall meeting, since these debates rarely take place in town halls anymore. Another one in the crosshairs, disruption, which has become an overused synonym for change in the tech world. Some of the other buzzy words to get the boot include on fleek, dad bod, and 831, which is apparently, and I had to look this up, Gordon, texting shorthand for I love you. I did not know
really?
This. Yeah, I thought, you know, you having teenagers, I thought you might know that one. That one's a little, my kids are still a little bit too young for that.
I think the one that they use the much most, is, especially on Instagram, is I-L-Y-S-M, which is I love you so much.
Gotcha.
I never heard of the 831, though. I don't recall seeing that.
No, apparently it's already done. It's already passed.
It's
past its prime, and it needs to get the boot.
I thought on fleek was dead like 2 years ago. I'm surprised that one's just getting the deep six now.
Because even I knew about that one and said, when it filters down to my level, and like I said, I don't even have teenage kids. My kids are too young for this kind of thing. So when it gets to me, that's when you know it's probably should be included on this list.
And dad bod, let's not revisit
yeah,
that.
Neither one of us, I think, need to have that. And the Indiana Pacers, Gordon, wasted little time trolling Mariah Carey after her much-talked-about New Year's Eve meltdown. Just one night after it was revealed she had a recorded backing track while performing live on national TV, the Indiana Pacers decided to debut a new feature during a break in the action, the lip sync cam. In-house cameras panned through the crowd while Mariah's song Emotions played on the public address. The stunt earned rave reviews from the crowd and other fans on social media, and the good vibes extended to the court, where the Pacers took care of the Orlando Magic 117-104.
As I joked last hour, Ohio State was greatly relieved that Mariah Carey took to the stage New Year's Eve,
exactly,
relieving them of having had the worst New Year's Eve performance.
Yes. Yeah. Who knew that they would be saved by Mariah?
And you know what the worst thing was? It's just her effort and attitude.
Right.
I mean, listen, at this point, nobody cares. Everybody knows you lip sync, right? Halftime of the Super Bowl, whatever.
Right.
It's just entertainment.
Right.
But when you can't even make an effort to dance or do something entertaining and you just complain, oh, I can't hear anything, and then then you storm off the stage. It's just... Yeah, just true diva
Doesn't
status.
Sound like she was well prepared. No,
I mean, come make an effort. Make an effort. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio. Glad you're with us. The U.S. military is warning against the danger of troops over-consuming energy drinks. A study by the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research found that nearly 45% of deployed military personnel consumed at least one energy drink daily. That's not so much the issue. It says the 14% of them, though, who drank three or more a day were more likely to report sleep disruption and were more likely to fall asleep during briefings or even on guard duty. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to the nation's new all-Republican leadership begins to take power today with an ambitious agenda of tax cuts, regulation rollbacks, and repeal of President Obama's health care law. But they face a complicated legislative path full of unresolved policy details. The Senate's opening move will be to initiate a controversial process to repeal parts of the Affordable Care Act, which has brought health insurance to more than 19 million people, but has taken a hit as the number of insurers offering coverage has shrunk and premiums have jumped. A powerful storm system that moved across the South killed four people in Alabama and left a trail of damage over several states. The line of storms spawned several possible tornadoes, and the threat continued into early today for southern Alabama, southwest Georgia, and the Florida Panhandle. After a judge ruled that Dylan Roof is competent to represent himself, the same jury that last month unanimously found him guilty in the slayings of nine black parishioners at a South Carolina church will return to court tomorrow to begin contemplating his punishment. While prosecutors plan to call up to 38 people, Roof said last week he plans on calling no witnesses and presenting no evidence. A poisonous gas believed to have been released when someone tried to wash away a pesticide that had been sprayed under a Texas home has killed four children and left six other people hospitalized. Captain Larry Davis is with the Amarillo Fire Department.
This fumigant contained a chemical called aluminum phosphide. And when mixed with water, it creates a gas called phosphine gas, which is highly poisonous.
Officials didn't release any identifying information, including the children's ages or whether they were related. Davis says all four people who died were residents in the home. A ninth-ranked USC has won the highest-scoring game in Rose Bowl history by rallying from a 14-point fourth-quarter deficit to beat Penn State last night, 52-49. ESPN's Chris Fowler as Penn State quarterback Trace McSorley threw an interception in the waning moments.
Another downfield shot. Godwin! And it is intercepted this time by McQuay. Down the sidelines and knocked out. With 27 seconds to go, the Trojans can win it in regulation.
That did set up the winning field goal as time expired. USC freshman Sam Darnold threw for 453 yards and five touchdowns.
Yeah, he's still got three more years.
Or two, so, or one. The way things go these days.
Good luck, Pac-12, dealing with him, right?
Yeah.
Man, oh man. 5.5 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Three families became parents of twins this weekend in different years. After 6 hours of labor, Holly Shea of Glendale, California, gave birth to Sawyer at 11:50 p.m. Saturday at Banner Thunderbird Medical Center outside Phoenix. Then Everett was born at 12:01 a.m. Sunday. UPI says Sawyer was 5 pounds 5 ounces, Everett 4 pounds 8 ounces, but he was also an inch taller than his older brother. That family expanded quickly. They already have two daughters. Also, a girl was born at 11:20 p.m. Her brother came into the world an hour later, 12:20 a.m. at Northside Hospital in Canton, Georgia. Elsewhere, twin girls born in San Diego at Sharp Mary Birch Hospital for Women and Newborns, one at 11:56 p.m., the second at exactly midnight. Last year, only one set of twins had births in separate years, also in San Diego. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.